Welcome to today's deep dive. We have a truly fascinating mission for you today.
Yeah, we are looking at something really unique this time.
Because if you just take a look around your workspace right now, you are probably surrounded by sleek, like impossibly thin consumer electronics.
Glass backs, brushed aluminum.
Exactly, the kind of devices that prioritize aesthetics over everything else, but they just shatter the second they slip off a
Oh,
desk.
absolutely. They're fragile.
But today, we are looking at a piece of technology that actively rejects that entire design philosophy. We are exploring a hyper-specialized, unapologetically brutalist piece of hardware called the Sovereign Deck.
Or, as it's sometimes referred to in the documentation, the field terminal. It really represents a complete paradigm shift away from the modern consumer tablet.
It's a total pivot. And to unpack this, we are pulling from a really interesting stack of sources today. We have an internal a single source of truth product document.
Which is essentially the manufacturer's internal playbook.
Right. Plus, we have the public WooCommerce storefront page, so we can see how this is actually positioned for buyers.
And the images, the real-world images of the device actively being used in the field.
Yeah, those are incredible.
Seeing the hardware in its natural habitat provides such critical context. I mean, spec sheets only tell half the story, right? Visualizing where and how this tool is deployed reveals its actual utility.
So let's unpack this. We are looking at a $1,299 CyberDeck style tool. It is not designed for media consumption.
You are definitely not watching movies on this.
No. The primary user base consists of field technicians, network auditors, and ag tech consultants. Its core mission is the maintenance and auditing of something called the Decentralized Deerticular Network.
And you hear the word decentralization thrown around constantly these days.
Oh, all the time.
But it's almost always framed around software, blockchains, or cloud architecture. We rarely discuss the physical infrastructure of a decentralized world.
The autonomous nodes sitting out in remote farm fields.
Exactly, or bolted to city rooftops.
Hmm.
They require a drastically different approach to maintenance. The Sovereign Deck functions as a human-machine interface, or HMI.
Right.
It's engineered for an era where physical networks are distributed and require manual, on-the-ground, human intervention and repair.
And that concept, the human-machine interface, it sets the stage perfectly for what this thing actually looks like. Looking at the real-world images, the Sovereign Deck is imposing.
Imposing is a good word for it.
In one shot, it's sitting on the dashboard of a dusty utility truck, they call it a curb car, out in a sun-baked desert environment.
And another image shows a worker in a high-vis vest operating it at a massive shipping port.
The chassis features these thick, chunky, rubberized corners in matte black and safety orange. The screen displays a glaring neon green terminal interface.
There's a stylus heavily tethered to the side.
Yeah, and sticking prominently out of the top of the chassis is a telescopic black antenna.
The aesthetic is completely secondary to survivability here. That industrial design is entirely focused on ensuring the device remained operational, regardless of the physical abuse it takes in those environments.
And the hardware specifications certainly reflect that priority. We are looking at an IP65 water and dust resistant chassis.
Rated for 1.5 meter drop protection.
Right. Under the hood, it uses 8 gigabytes of RAM and a user replaceable 256 gigabyte SSD. But I have to pause on the processor choice. It uses an Intel Celeron N5100.
Yeah, not exactly a powerhouse chip.
For a device costing nearly $1,300, why opt for a Celeron?
They opted for the N5100 specifically for its thermal profile. It's not going to win any benchmark tests, but by sacrificing raw processing power, they eliminate the need for active cooling.
Ah, so no fans.
Exactly. A cooling fan requires intake vents, which would immediately suck in Arizona dust, moisture, and debris, completely compromising the internal components.
That makes perfect sense. It's a deliberate engineering trade-off for environmental sealing. You trade synthetic performance for physical reliability. And looking at the interface, the screen and power delivery are heavily customized for outdoor use too. They went with a 10.1-inch IPS display, pumping out 800 nits of brightness.
Because if you were standing in the harsh glare of a shipping port trying to diagnose a network failure,
a standard 300-nit glossy screen is basically a mirror.
Visibility is a primary constraint in field work. Furthermore, the touch interface itself is specialized. It utilizes a capacitive multi-touch screen calibrated to register inputs from wet fingers and heavy work gloves.
That is so crucial. Plus, they integrated a 5,000 milliamp hour hot swappable battery.
That feature alone is a massive operational advantage.
Because you don't even have to power down the device to swap the battery, right? You just eject the depleted one and snap a fresh one in for multi-day field operations without interrupting your workflow.
That hot swappable battery is basically an admission that in this line of work, the environment is the enemy. And the operator's time is the most valuable asset on the board.
Yeah.
You cannot afford to lose your session data or wait for a reboot just because you ran out of charge in the middle of a diagnostic run.
Absolutely not.
There is another hardware inclusion that really caught my attention. Tucked among the modern USB-C ports on the side of the chassis is an RS-232 serial port, specifically a DB9 connector.
In the realm of industrial infrastructure, legacy hardware never truly phases out.
Yeah.
That RS-232 port is vital for interfacing with older entrenched equipment.
We are talking about legacy solar inverters or heavy industrial controllers that just do not have Wi-Fi or Bluetooth capabilities.
Exactly. And the internal documentation also mentions using that serial connection to interface with corrupted autonomous nodes on the dereticular network.
The Nomad and Sentry nodes.
Right. When a node suffers a catastrophic software failure, it drops off the network entirely. You cannot push an over-the-air update to a device that is no longer communicating.
Right, it's just a brick at that point.
So that physical, low-level serial connection allows the technician to bypass the bootloader, inject rescue code directly into the hardware, and bring the node back online. It is a hardline failsafe.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. The Sovereign Deck features a hardware modification that separates it from standard rugged tablets.
ASDR.
Yes, the internal documents detail an integrated software-defined radio, or SDR. They are using an internal RTL2832U module.
Which ties directly into the tagline on their storefront page.
See the invisible? What exactly are the operators looking at with this SDR?
Well, the dereticular mesh network relies on a complex overlapping web of radio frequencies. We are dealing with 915 megahertz LoRa packets, 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi beacons, and LTE handshake signals.
And to a standard laptop, that RF traffic is completely invisible.
The Sovereign Deck uses its integrated SDR, paired with pre-installed software called SDR++, to intercept those invisible radio waves and translate them into a visual map.
So that glaring green interface from the promotional images, that is the visualization of the local RF spectrum.
Precisely. It displays as a cascading waterfall graph on the screen. The operator can literally watch the network traffic, identify signal strength, and pinpoint anomalies in real time across multiple frequency bands.
I was looking at the storefront page, and they highlight a specific real-world application they call the Ghost Hunter scenario. How does visualizing the RF spectrum actually solve a physical problem out in an agricultural setting?
It is a perfect illustration of diagnosing invisible infrastructure. Imagine an agricultural operation where remote soil and moisture sensors suddenly start dropping packets.
The mesh network is failing.
Right, and the standard digital dashboards offer no explanation. The technician deploys the Sovereign Deck, extends the telescopic antenna, and launches the SDR++ software.
And instead of looking for a software bug, they are scanning the physical environment.
They are scanning the local RF environment. On that waterfall graph, they might suddenly identify a massive localized spike of radio noise flooding the frequency.
And they track the physical source of that interference.
Exactly. It turns out to be an aging, unshielded water pump motor that is spewing out electromagnetic interference. It is essentially jamming the local sensors.
So the technician repairs or shields the motor, the interference ceases, and the mesh network heals.
That's the ghost they were hunting.
The documentation hints at an even broader application for this SDR capability, noting that operators can use it to fingerprint the electromagnetic signatures of heavy industrial machinery.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the implications of that fingerprinting capability are profound. Think about the concept of proof of work in decentralized networks.
Historically, that's a cryptographic software-based process.
But bridging the gap between digital ledgers and physical mechanics presents a unique challenge. How do you definitively prove a piece of physical machinery actually performed the work it claimed to do?
Because a digital log detailing the machine's activity could theoretically be spoofed or manipulated?
Any digital log can be altered. However, an industrial machine, whether it's a harvester, a generator, or a heavy pump, emits a highly specific physical electromagnetic signature while operating under load.
Oh, wow.
By utilizing the SDR, the operator can record that physical RF emission. they are establishing an immutable proof of work based on the laws of physics and raw electromagnetism, circumventing the need to trust a potentially compromised digital reporting system.
That fundamentally changes the auditing process. And naturally, leveraging hardware this specialized requires a highly specific software environment. You might expect a tablet in this form factor to run an industrial build of Windows or a stripped-down Android ROM.
Instead, it runs a custom dereticular OS based entirely on Kali Linux, which has been optimized for a touch interface.
Kali Linux is traditionally utilized as a penetration testing and cybersecurity auditing tool.
Seeing it deployed as the foundational operating system for a field tablet underscores the core philosophy of the Sovereign Deck. Most commercial operating systems are designed to abstract away the complex network layers to make things user-friendly.
And that abstraction is exactly what a field auditor does not want.
Kali Linux is designed for absolute control and deep, unfiltered network visibility. It provides the operator with raw access to the system processes and network interfaces required to diagnose complex mesh interactions.
Which brings us to another fascinating software inclusion, a local AI model called Hemp-Grade AI. The documentation outlines a crop auditor scenario.
Right.
If an agricultural producer needs to certify the quality of a hemp harvest, the auditor arrives with the Sovereign Deck. They utilize the deck's rear 8-megapixel camera to capture macro photography of the crop.
But instead of uploading those images to a cloud server for remote processing, the analysis happens entirely on the device.
They are utilizing a local TensorFlow Lite AI model to instantly grade the trichome density and overall quality of the crop.
This approach highlights a critical stance on connectivity and data sovereignty. By processing the AI model locally at the edge, the auditor is completely independent of cellular network availability in remote agricultural zones.
And more importantly, they are not relying on a centralized corporate API to validate the data. It is an entirely self-contained analysis.
And the workflow immediately following that analysis integrates directly with the decentralized infrastructure.
Once the local AI grades the crop, the auditor uses a physical hardware token called a sovereign key.
The integration of physical hardware keys elevates the security protocol significantly.
The auditor taps the sovereign key against the deck's built-in NFC reader to authenticate their identity. The deck then cryptographically signs a quality certificate based on the AI's findings.
And pushes that certified data directly to something called the Locutus Ledger.
It establishes an unbroken, localized chain of trust.
The hardware capturing the data, the AI performing the analysis, the cryptographic signature verifying the operator, and the final ledger update all occur securely at the edge, guided by a human operator in the field.
It systematically removes opaque corporate middlemen and cloud bottlenecks from the auditing process.
The software also features a robust fail-safe mechanism known as the Locutus CLI, or Command Line Interface. This toolset is specifically designed for disaster recovery scenarios out in the field.
When dealing with remote autonomous nodes, you have to account for catastrophic update failures.
If a critical node receives a corrupted over-the-air update and bricks itself, the Locutus CLI is the ultimate contingency plan.
The technician interfaces the deck with the unresponsive node via that DB9 serial port we talked about, boots up the CLI, and manually forces a ledger sync or injects a clean rescue image to resuscitate the hardware.
It is the digital equivalent of a defibrillator.
The entire software stack, from Kali Linux to the local AI and the CLI, is engineered around the assumption that remote infrastructure will fail.
And the local operator must have the absolute authority and the requisite tools to manually intervene.
Building a device that can survive everything we just talked about, the serial injections, the desert heat, the integrated SDR analysis, is historically a massively expensive endeavor.
Developing a bespoke, ruggedized, IP65-rated chassis from scratch requires millions of dollars in research, development, and tooling.
For a niche product, that kind of overhead is often fatal. But looking at the internal documents, the business and manufacturing strategy behind the Sovereign Deck is surprisingly transparent and incredibly lean.
The internal bill of materials, the Bill of Demo, lays out their financial model.
The Sovereign Deck retails for $1,299, but the total cost to manufacture is roughly $740.
That yields a 43% gross margin, which is very sustainable for low-volume specialized hardware.
But it is how they reach that $740 cost that is so fascinating. They aren't building this from the ground up.
They are utilizing a white-label hardware strategy, which is a brilliant approach to circumventing those massive R&D costs.
They source a $550 base rugged tablet from an OEM in Shenzhen brands operating in the same space as MDOR or Durabook.
They take that reliable pre-engineered base platform and then add a $35 SDR modification kit,
which includes the RTL SDR board and the antenna hardware. Finally, they allocate $65 per unit for internal labor to manually modify every single tablet.
By leveraging an existing industrial platform, they can focus their capital and engineering resources entirely on the specialized capabilities.
The SDR integration and the custom Kali Linux OS.
The internal documentation details the standard operating procedure for this manufacturing phase, which takes place at a facility called the Node 3 Workshop in Arizona.
It is an intensely manual, highly invasive process. During phase one and phase two, the technicians intake the base tablets, run diagnostics on the touch screens, and check for dead pixels.
Then, they actively break the factory water seal, open the chassis, and mount the bare SDR circuit board internally.
And then comes the most critical point of failure in the entire modification process. To route the antenna, their official SOP dictates that the technicians literally take a drill and bore a hole directly through the top of the chassis to mount the SMA antenna connector.
Taking a drill to an IP65-rated waterproof tablet seems like a massive liability.
How does that not instantly ruin the weatherproofing and void every operational guarantee of the device?
It absolutely destroys the weatherproofing the moment the drill pierces the chassis. That is why their risk mitigation protocol for phase two has to be flawlessly executed.
To restore that crucial IP65 rating, the technicians must meticulously seal the newly integrated antenna junction with marine-grade epoxy.
So they're relying on shipyard-style waterproofing to save the high-tech electronics.
It is brute force engineering, but it is highly effective if verified correctly.
After the epoxy cures, they do not simply assume the seal is tight. The SOP requires a literal vacuum pressure test on the modified chassis to empirically prove the device can withstand environmental intrusion before it ever moves to the software phase.
Once it passes the vacuum test, they move to phase three. They completely wipe the stock Windows IoT license off the drive, flash the custom Dereticular OS, and run calibration tests to ensure the SDR frequency is tuned accurately.
It is a wildly labor-intensive workflow.
And this Frankenstein approach to manufacturing introduces some very unique challenges, which are documented in their internal risk register.
The risk register highlights the friction between deploying powerful, specialized hardware and navigating real-world regulatory and operational realities.
One of the most glaring risks is the legal liability of the SDR itself.
Because a software-defined radio can tune into a vast spectrum of frequencies, it is entirely capable of intercepting unencrypted analog police dispatch, EMS radios, or aviation channels, depending on local jurisdiction laws.
They are essentially distributing a device capable of sophisticated signals intelligence to civilian operators. The regulatory exposure there is significant.
To mitigate that exposure, the manufacturer implemented a strict onboarding protocol.
The very first time the sovereign deck boots up, the user is forced to sign a click-through liability waiver, acknowledging the legal restrictions of RF interception.
Furthermore, the SDR++ software is hard-coded to default to standard ISM bands, like 915 megahertz and 2.4 gigahertz.
By locking the default frequencies to industrial, scientific, and medical bands, they ensure the device is scanning utility frequencies right out of the box, rather than accidentally wiretapping a highway patrol frequency.
It shifts the legal burden of responsible frequency scanning entirely onto the operator.
There is also a fascinating software hurdle detailed in the risk register. Because they are relying on white-label-based tablets sourced from Shenzhen, the Linux hardware drivers, particularly for the touchscreen, can be notoriously unstable.
Hardware fragmentation is the bane of custom Linux distributions. A minor kernel update that works perfectly on a desktop machine can completely sever the communication between the OS and a niche-capacitive touch controller.
To prevent a random over-the-air update from breaking the touch interface while a technician is deployed in a remote location, the developers utilize a very pragmatic, almost duct-tape-style solution.
They identify the specific stable drivers, bake them directly into the core of the OS, and deliberately lock the Linux kernel. They disable core updates by default.
It is a controversial move in the standard software development world, where constant updates are the norm.
But a field technician does not care about having the latest kernel version. Their sole priority is that the screen consistently responds to input when they are wearing wet gloves in the middle of a diagnostic run.
Stability absolutely supersedes software recency.
Every single time.
So what does this all mean? We have explored a device featuring thick rubber bumpers, marine epoxy seals, local AI processing, and hardware designed to map invisible radio waves.
If we step back and look at the broader picture, the Sovereign Deck represents a fundamental philosophical shift in how technology can be engineered and deployed.
It is a definitive rejection of the disposable, rigidly locked down consumer technology ecosystem we have grown accustomed to.
It is a hyper-specialized tool that champions the right to repair and prioritizes operator control above all else.
It treats the end user not as a passive consumer generating data for a cloud server, but as a capable mechanic.
It quite literally gives them the keys, both cryptographically and physically, to the systems they operate.
True decentralization is frequently pitched as a frictionless, automated utopia that exists entirely in the cloud.
But the reality is that the physical world is chaotic. Hardware degrades, antennas drift out of alignment, and aging machinery creates localized interference.
Maintaining a truly decentralized physical network requires rugged, specialized hardware and capable human operators in the dirt.
It requires empowering individuals with the necessary tools to see, diagnose, and repair the invisible infrastructure that surrounds us without needing a persistent connection to a centralized authority.
It fundamentally comes down to giving people sovereignty over the critical systems they rely on every single day.
Exactly.
Which leads to a final thought for you to consider. We have seen how the Sovereign Deck allows local operators to independently audit, repair, and certify physical assets, whether that is an agricultural harvest or a critical network node entirely independent of centralized cloud servers or corporate APIs.
If tools prioritizing this kind of offline technological sovereignty become more widespread,
how might that fundamentally alter the way we manage our power grids, our local agriculture, or even our own neighborhood communications networks in the near future? If the local operator holds the tools to verify the data without the cloud, who actually controls the infrastructure? Something to chew on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll catch you on the next one.